Hello, everyone, and welcome to another week of Trad Tasman Talk. I'm Tim Wilms, editor-in-chief of The Unshackled. It is 6 p.m. here in still lockdown Melbourne.
And it is 8 p.m. here in no longer lockdown Auckland.
Because you got to go from alert level 2.5 to 2. So what does that mean?
So level 2 means mandatory masks on public transport and limits on social gatherings to 100 people, and basically encouragement to maintain social distancing. But other than that, there are no actual restrictions. I suspect the 100 social gathering limit is fairly loosely enforced, and the masks on public transport is not actually enforced at all. So it's basically no longer in lockdown.
Now, you've got the New Zealand police, as you said, the educational approach. They're not doing what Victoria police are doing. And also, there was footage that went viral of a woman at a sports game in Ohio who got arrested and handcuffed for not wearing a mask.
Yeah, and I've seen various other videos from various different states in America with people being dragged away for all kinds of offences, as long as it's not a gathering for a BLM protest.
And the rest of the nation has got to go to alert level 1.
That's right. So level 1 means be vigilant. But there's no actual requirements. I believe I said this on a previous show. It's kind of like the orange alert system for terrorism, which is like, oh, we're watching out for terrorism, we're watching out for COVID. But there's no actual, I suppose some people get paid to look at things.
Because it could, the virus, it could come out of a freezer like it did last month. Have they determined where
They've not determined where it came from. It's that's why I said in the end we've stuck with an immaculate spontaneous generation situation. The virus spontaneously generated back in New Zealand borders, but they have ruled out the freezer theory. The frozen, what we had discussed as frozen chicken, that turned out to be frozen peas, turned out to just be spontaneous generation instead.
Yeah, so nobody knows how the virus mysteriously got back into
Nobody Auckland. Knows, that's right.
And, nothing.
They know nothing at all. Mm. And now we have got a few more mystery cases now where basically somebody had been cleared from quarantine and tested positive and was put on a government flight back to Auckland. So these people were in Christchurch. And now several people connected to that flight have tested positive. And by the way, masks are mandatory on these flights as well. So clearly we did not help the people sitting next to him at all. But they claim that it's all under control. We've had very few cases in the last week or two. So it's they basically admitted they've just got to go back to normal. So
So you're basically now at the New South Wales stage, which is open, but they find a new case every couple of days or so.
Yep.
So, but
yep.
Premier's credit, Gladys Berejiklian, she did not panic when the Melbourne wave started to infect various areas of Sydney, and she's kept the state open. And she announced this week that dancing at weddings can resume, and people can sing in up to groups of 5.
Oh, very, very generous.
Yes, so progress there. But when you think about these sorts of, when it's announced, oh, you can do this again, you sort of think, wow, we were prevented from doing it before. Something that had been legal all the time up until 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Hello to everyone who's just come into the chat as well. We're just getting stuck into the show. As usual, we'll go through all of the stories of the week and put your questions in the chat, and we'll answer as many as we can near the end of the show. We're going to keep things tight to 9 p.m. Auckland time here for me. I've had a busy week out campaigning.
Yes, because you can now.
And we can campaign. And there's a lot of stuff going on, obviously. I'm involved with a lot of the you know sort of national level campaign here for New Conservative, so keeps me very busy during the week. Yeah, going to go to bed early tonight, and obviously got another day out tomorrow. You know, billboards, flyers, and the likes. So, I'm looking forward to it. It's a month to go, really. So 1 month to go to the election, and we've also had a new poll out this past week. The very strangely, polling has been incredibly sporadic this past year.
Yes, I've got it up now. This is a News One poll.
Yep. So. One News Colmar Brunton survey. Labour is still polling high enough to govern alone, so it's not quite 50%, but they don't need it due to the rounding system in MMP. Obviously, the votes that don't make it are subtracted from the total, which will push, you know, this distribution of seats and can end up being a little bit different to what parties actually get on the day. So with Labour at near 50%, they're still a shoo-in for being able to govern alone, which if the this poll is accurate, essentially, if we see a result like this a month from now, I think most people would prefer to see just a Labour government rather than a Labour Greens government, because obviously if Labour drops a point or two, but the Greens hold steady, you'll end up with a wonderful Labour-Greens coalition that everybody is looking forward to. You can see that Jacinda Ardern's popularity remains fairly high, although it was not, you know, has not changed much since the COVID Wu flu situation from back in March. So she's simply remained steady over this time, not really gaining or losing overall preferred status, although I think her popularity overall is up, which is not something that you see in this poll. You can see that the National Party is fairly stable, even though they switched leaders twice in the past few months. They are still polling at 30%, which is much below their 2017 result. We shall see how that holds up the next month. And you can see the ACT Party there, which is the sort of libertarian party, is really boosting up high. They were at 0.5% in 2017. They are possibly polling, you know, to get six or seven MPs, or actually more from that, probably about nine or so. Whether they actually hold that on the day, we shall see. They are basically being put forward as sort of the liberal libertarian alternative to the National Party. That's sort of slightly more in that
call it's a credit left-wing libertarian space. David Seymour's leadership in opposing the crackdown on civil liberties post Christchurch in 2019, and opposing the crackdown on civil liberties with the coronavirus pandemic in 2020.
Yeah, and one of the things though that I think factors into there is. To their popularity is a lot of people not are either ignorant of some of their stances, especially on abortion, the fact that they are 100% pro-abortion
and euthanasia,
wanted an even more liberal act. They wanted no restrictions at all of any kind. Obviously very pro-immigration. So these are things that either people don't know about or have basically pushed to the side, pushed to the back as unimportant. But usually, often we'll see that people who do find these issues important will push more towards New Conservative. Obviously, you can see they were polling at 2%.
Well, you would like
not
that.
Not high enough, and I would like that. But I find that when we come across people who are like, who are more conservative, and they're, for instance, finding themselves supporting National ACT. If you sit down and have a discussion with them, they're like, oh wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know that they were that pro-abortion. I didn't know Judith Collins, who leads the National Party, is pro-abortion. Actually, I'm going to vote New Conservative. So that's something that I find is, people don't pay as much attention as we do by following every little bit of news and dissecting it and discussing it. And so having that discussion with people is important. So I think we're still a month away, and there's still obviously a poll is a poll, and the real result you get on the day. You would have seen several other parties on there at 1%. Nothing's too significant there other than that Advance, which is the public party, and I believe some people in the comments, especially Australians, have asked about that the past few weeks, with the officially the conspiracy theory party.
Or what we call in Australia the tinfoil hat batshit crazy.
Yes, I'm. Is that a registered party in Australia? It sounds like.
Oh, that's the new terminology that was put forward by Chief Wiggum here in Victoria.
Oh yes, exactly. So they're polling at 1% there, and probably you can see that there is the Māori Party as well. They are polling at 1%, and then there was another one in their top, Opportunities Party. They're basically the UBI party, Universal Basic Income. Types, the radical centrists.
Oh, yeah. God, I hate that word. It triggers me.
And then obviously the ethno-nationalist Māori Party at 1% as well. Apparently, a lot of their support is actually being pulled into the conspiracy party. And so there are a lot of triggered leftists complaining that too many brown people are becoming conspiracy theorists, and that conspiracy theories are white supremacy. And so they're incredibly triggered that apparently brown people are becoming white supremacists.
Yeah, because white liberals, they know what brown people want more than brown people themselves.
Yeah, that's right. The white man's burden is very, very strong.
And the bigotry of low expectations.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so that's all the polling there.
Apparently, the Māori Party, they want to try and get some generate some publicity. They want to change the name of New Zealand.
Yes, that's right. They have announced that Aotearoa would become the official name. We've had some fun trying to get that pronunciation past you every time. and I think that's the real problem, is nobody else can pronounce it.
ANZ Bank would have to change their name to AA Bank.
Exactly. And then they'd have to share a name with the Automobile Association and Alcoholics Anonymous. So
now, last week on this show, you brought to the audience's attention that Jacinta Ardern, with her campaign selfie, broke social distancing, but she's now apologised for
it. She has.
But this was in the South Island, wasn't it?
This was, I believe, Palmerston North.
Oh, which is not too far from Auckland.
Massey University, which was in Level 2. But, I mean, even the South Island was officially on Level 2. And officially at Level 2, you're supposed to keep your 1.5-meter distance from strangers. But her apology was incredibly condescending. She's like, oh, yes, people... I should have told them to stay back. I should have, I was looking the wrong way and I didn't see how close everyone had gotten to me. And I should have paid, told the commoners to keep their distance, sort of style where, people are just so enthusiastic. But of course, rather than just owning it up and saying, yeah, who cares? Obviously she's wasn't going to do that, because she's the one who put the rules in place. But that was the actual response. Like, nobody cares about the distancing. So.
As we know, both in Victoria and Western Australia, governments can just pass laws or try and pass laws to exempt themselves from their own laws. Because WA has passed the anti-Clive law to prevent him suing the state government for breach of contract.
We haven't got to that stage yet. No.
And of course, it's October 17th is the new election date.
Yes.
It was supposed to be September 19th a week ago, but it was delayed due to the freezer virus.
spontaneous generation. We get some laughs in the chat where I actually call it the Immaculate Conception virus, but that could work too, I suppose.
Well, China seems to claim that the only conclusion you can draw from the line from China is that it was immaculately concepted. No, it didn't come from our nation. Of course, Facebook doesn't like it when you mention it came from bat soup or a bioweapons lab.
That's right. The latest scientist who claimed that it was a bioweapon, or at least made in a lab, sorry, not a bioweapon, but escaped from their lab. I believe she was recently banned from social media or something.
Yeah, she was banned from Twitter, Facebook took down her interview with Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, so there you go. We know who's in control there. And cheers as well. Margot as well. She's drinking gin and tonic as well. So yeah.
Margot, everyone else, got their drinks. Like me, we're still still under the one of the most draconian lockdowns in the world. But
UK is going to be completely.
Yes, they're 6 month lockdown.
Christmas is cancelled.
Yes, it's going to be a cold, lonely Christmas for your own safety.
Of course.
Good yeah, luck. Yeah.
Last time Christmas was cancelled was Oliver Cromwell. So it's been a little while since the Puritans controlled the English Parliament. So yeah. I can drink to that one too.
Yeah. And Boris Johnson is channeling his inner Dan Andrews, saying if you don't abide by the rules, I'll make them tighter.
Exactly. We'll bring in the army. Go door to door. Yeah.
You've also got, as I keep reminding our audience, that on election day, you've got the two referenda, one for euthanasia, despite this being the year of protecting the old and vulnerable, not euthanizing them, and also the recreational cannabis referendum.
Yeah, and so those are on the same day as the election. We haven't had too much updated polling on that recently. The cannabis one looks to be 50-50. The assisted dying seems to be more so in favor of passing. So we'll see what happens. But obviously, while we're doing the cannabis legalization and control bill, we've got the government campaigning for smoke-free New Zealand. So I don't know what they expect you to do with the cannabis, but they don't want you to smoke it. And obviously, same thing with the euthanasia. As long as you're not dying of COVID-19, then it's okay to die.
And you've also brought to our attention that Jacinta, she hasn't forgotten about passing new hate speech laws.
That's right. They had it all came back in the news this week, 2 days ago. Was it 2 days ago now?
Yeah.
Make sure I get my day right. The 24th was yesterday.
Yeah. When we talk about religion in hate speech laws, what we mean blasphemy laws.
That's right. So, so she had unveiled a plaque memorializing the victims of the March 15th shooting at the mosques in Christchurch. And she was asked about hate speech legislation, and the imam there had said that he wanted hate speech laws. So I can read this out here.
Yeah.
Taking the opportunity to push for change, the imam Gamal Fauda expressed how he wanted to prevent another attack. Freedom of speech becomes hate speech, he said at the unveiling. Hate turns into hate crime, as we have seen at the 15th of March.
2019.
I'd like to see a new law in New Zealand, and I think New Zealand has seen a lot, and we went through a lot, and the blood of those people shouldn't be forgotten. Labour has promised a change this term, but it has failed. And Jacinda said, we haven't been able to deliver that last term, but my intention would be if we're able to form a government, we would do that. She's implying there that obviously once New Zealand First, once Winston Peters is gone, and he's obviously polling at 2%, which I forgot to mention when we went over the polls at the beginning, but he would be gone if the polling holds to the election. And she carries on here saying, religion hasn't been included in that, and it's my view that does need to change, and that would be our plan if we were privileged enough to form government again. And I'll cut across to her quote at the end here, saying that if it gets a chance to broaden our hate speech laws, Labour wouldn't stop with just religion. Ardern said, yeah, when News Hub asked if sexual orientation, age or disability could be included. So if you criticize religion, sexual orientation, age or disability, you could be committing crimes in New Zealand.
What about gender and gender identity?
So if you're a tranny, you're out of luck, I think. Criteria they claim here is this is grounds for discrimination is color, race or ethnicity at the moment. And that's discrimination. So there's no protection at all if you're a tranny. Sorry, you can still be insulted.
Well, last year in Victoria, Fiona Patton, the Reason Party MLC crossbencher in the Victorian upper house, proposed the Racial and Religious Tolerance Amendment Act, which would expand the Racial and Religious Tolerance Act, which Blair Cottrell was convicted under Section 25(2) of inciting severe contempt, revulsion, or ridicule of a class of persons over that the Bendigo mock beheading stunt. Fiona Patten wants to expand it to include gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, age, and disability. And the Labor Andrews government, because Fiona and the Andrews government are quite chummy together. She voted for the 6 month extension to the state of emergency. She said at the moment she won't vote for the COVID omnibus bill in its current form. She'll offer amendments to the provisions which allow the government to appoint any authorised officer who could detain someone indefinitely if they're considered a risk to public health. So she said she won't support that in its current form. So I don't know. I don't know what amendment she's got in mind. That
got a limit of 100 years should do it.
Yes, because she got the, what is it, the Daniel Andrews initially proposed an extension of 12 months to the state of emergency powers, but she negotiated it down to a one-off 6 month COVID extension. And that was, of course, before Dan Andrews announced his slow roadmap out of lockdown, which we're due to take the next mini step on Monday, September 28th, because our 14-day case average, new case average, that's the new metric now. For metropolitan Melbourne, it's 25.1. We had 14 new cases today. And for regional Victoria, which has already had some relaxation, is at 0.8. So we'll be going from stage 3.9 to stage 3.8, which means that you'll be allowed to gather in groups of five from two households. But only for 2 hours per day. The 9 p.m. curfew stays in place, so does the 5 kilometre limit, and only outdoor swimming pools are allowed to reopen.
Wow, so is it actually called 2.9 and 2.8? Or
are you that's what it's just I've called it. Though Dan Andrews has said, oh, since we're going so well, he might look at relaxing more restrictions, but don't get too excited because we're not going to open up on Monday. But he said he's going to decide late Saturday night. So we'll have he's done over 80 daily press conferences now. So we'll have another Sunday Dan decision day where we all have to tune in to decide how much more freedom he's going to grant us.
Our sort of largest national party blog, liberal blog, basically did a post today about how even bad leaders are popular, citing the approval ratings that Dan Andrews has, basically saying if you screw everything up and let 600 people die and can't control your borders properly, then everybody will still love you. So that's tying it into the New Zealand election, saying, "Oh, this is how hard it is for the New Zealand opposition to get anywhere because imagine if Jacinda stuffed everything up, she'd still be loved just as much as Dan Andrews."
Well, she stuffed a lot up, but it's not apparent as yet because she's only in her
first
term.
That's the important thing, though. But Dan Andrews has apparent and rather openly stuffed things up. But I think a good response to this is to say that there is no real opposition in Melbourne, right? But there's no alternative. People wondering, well, why do people still love Dan Andrews? Well, they're not presented with any alternatives. There's nobody providing a different vision, at least not that we can see.
The Victorian Liberal opposition has significantly improved over the past 6 months. The fact that Dan Andrews has turned Victoria into a blend of a nanny state and a police state has finally put a firecracker under the state opposition now. They're finally being noticed now, which is a significant improvement, doing a lot of media. This week we had the grand final week of the hotel quarantine inquiry, which A lot of people, including myself, have mistakenly referred to it as a judicial inquiry. It's not. It's a board of inquiry, which basically means the inquiry has no subpoena powers and can't compel witnesses to give testimony, and there's no consequences for lying to this board of inquiry. So we had the senior departmental bureaucrats and also senior Andrews ministers testified this week, and of course Dan Andrews today testified. We still don't know who decided to use private security guards for the hotel quarantine, which created the second wave in Victoria, which is why we're under lockdown, and who rejected Australian Defence Force assistance. This was a graphic done by Seven News. Premier Daniel Andrews does not know. Emergency Management Commissioner Andrew Crisp does not know. Former Chief Police Chief Commissioner Graham Ashton does not know. Current Chief Commissioner Shane Patton does not know. Police Minister Lisa Neville does not know. Health Minister Jenny McCarkos does not know. Chief Health Officer Brett Sutton does not know. Deputy Chief Health Officer Dr. Annalise Van Diemen does not know. So they don't know.
They know nothing.
So clearly
they see nothing.
They hear nothing. Somebody on Twitter said, clearly the private security companies, they contracted and paid themselves and rocked up to the hotel quarantine to do the guarding.
And when it comes to protecting things, the your elected officials or your bureaucrats are experts at protecting themselves.
Mm. There seems to be an outbreak of amnesia virus in the upper echelons of the Andrews government, and I'm not sure if this is common practice in New Zealand. What do you have? Commission of Inquiries, or
we have Royal Inquiries, okay. Which is the only thing that, and I do believe they have some teeth, but usually what we have, for instance, we're still waiting to hear back on the Royal Inquiry into the March 16th terrorist attack. Unless we have heard from them and it was so uneventful that I didn't hear about it. But to my knowledge, they haven't actually reported anything back yet. Mm. And it'll be after the election, you know, after it doesn't matter anymore, basically. Okay. You know. And so same thing with any inquiry into the COVID-19 response, whether, you know, we had the appropriate reaction to the Chinese virus and the CCP destruction of our economy. That all of that will wait until after the election, and usually they will report some decent findings, but then there's no real way to act on them if the timing, you know, the timing is controlled right. There will never be any repercussions.
So this was a cartoon by Mark Knight in the Herald Sun today, which is a new mutation of the coronavirus has been found, which causes Victorian public officials to suffer memory loss, and this is obviously the COVID COVID cell here, and it's got all the various ministers here, and he always has this Mark Knight, this pig in the corner who suggests things, and it says pray for a vaccine. Daniel Andrews took the stand today at around 2:30 p.m. Melbourne time, and I've got a photo of it here. Now, despite him not being compelled to tell the truth, meaning that there's no consequences, he still decided to swear on the Bible to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help him God, because he is a Catholic, even though he's shut down all the Catholic churches. And his Victoria police did whatever they could to wrongly convict Catholic Cardinal George Pell of historical child sexual abuse. But yeah, he's a Catholic, and so is his deputy education minister, James Molino, who helped oversee the Safe Schools program with Ros Ward, that cultural Marxist. Yeah, and so this is the meme that was put around this afternoon. Experts amazed the Premier didn't spontaneously combust when he touched the Bible.
Appropriate.
Yeah, I watched most of it. It was very tedious. to get through it. It was certainly better though than his daily press conferences, because answering questions from a counsel assisting an inquiry is a bit different from answering questions from journalists. And so this is what Seven News has written: Victorian Premier's bombshell admission at hotel inquiry. Dan Andrews told the hotel quarantine inquiry he does not know who made the decision. I do not know who made that decision, he wrote in a submission. I expected that there would be a mix of different personnel playing different roles in the program, including members of Victoria Police. But the way in which that decision was to be implemented, including the mix of personnel that was to be engaged in their respective roles, was an operational matter.
Yes, the old operational matter line that gets trotted out in New Zealand as well with by any ministers when they're asked to take any responsibility. Well, that's an operational matter. We don't concern ourselves with those little things.
And it said, following a national cabinet meeting on March 27th, he told reporters police, private security, and all of their health team will monitor compliance in a much easier way. He told the inquiry he's not certain why he mentioned private security at that point in time. And the inquiry heard the decision to hire private security guards wasn't made until a meeting at the State Control Centre at 4:30 p.m. And he said, I can't clarify you or outline for you why I chose those three groups. I'm afraid I tried to search my recall of this. That's the most common thing at these commissions or inquiries. I can't recall.
Can't remember. I can't recall.
Yeah, I can't provide you with details as to why they're mentioned and others aren't. In his statement, the Premier said he had no view on the appropriateness of using private security as the front line of security. And he also told the inquiry hotel quarantine program was an appropriate response to deal with the very significant risk. At a time when we were trying to buy time to prepare a health system, which we now know he
They didn't
didn't
do.
prepare the health system, at a time when they were expecting things would unfold, much like they had in some other parts of the world. In his statement, Mr. Andrews states, Jenny Markakos and the Department of Health and Human Services were primarily responsible for the running of the program, so essentially threw her under the bus. Ms. Markakos, she told the inquiry, there was shared accountability between her department, Jobs Minister Martin Pakula's department. This is what he said: at the start of the program, I regarded Minister Markakos and Minister Pakula as responsible for informing cabinet about and seeking cabinet endorsement of the initial overall service model and costing that had been determined of the program. I then regarded Minister Markakos as accountable for the program, but he regards himself as ultimately accountable for the Victorian government and any decisions made about the structure and operations of the program. And Mr. Andrews is the final witness before the $3 million inquiry headed by retired Judge Jennifer Cote. He's being represented by three lawyers: Stephen O'Meara QC, Kathleen Foley, and Olive Kloeck. And Victoria's second wave of coronavirus has resulted in more than 18,000 new infections and 750 deaths, can be traced to outbreaks at two Melbourne hotels used in the quarantine program. So it'll hand down its final report on November 6th. So I don't know if in that time they'll be able to figure out who made the decision.
Who knows? It's probably unlikely, unless they find somebody they can throw under the bus. But I feel like if they had decided that they were going to throw somebody under the bus, they would have done so by now.
Well, it
It's
looks
just
like
likely the
he's
scapegoat.
yeah
There is no scapegoat.
he's trying to throw Jenny Markakos under the bus.
But not well enough, it seems. Well, I suppose you'll have to wait and see. But whether there's any kind of accountability will remain to be seen.
Well, next week, the next show trial is in the Supreme Court of Victoria with the challenge to the legality of Melbourne's curfew, which we are still living under. We don't know whether Daniel Andrews will decide to get rid of the curfew or the 5 kilometre radius on Sunday. We're sort of thinking maybe he'll make the curfew at 10 p.m., given that we start daylight savings next Saturday night.
That's right. And on that actually subject quickly, we start daylight savings tomorrow, I believe. So next week's show will likely push back an hour later in New Zealand time. And then we'll sink back up again, I suspect, is what's going to happen.
Although some health experts have said that daylight saving should be cancelled due to increased coronavirus risk. Even Dan...
Daylight savings causes coronavirus, or puts you at greater risk of coronavirus.
Even Dan Andrews thought that was absurd.
Oh, that's disappointing. It sounds like one of the least absurd things I've heard recently.
Yeah, I'm shocked that he didn't take the opportunity to interfere with our lives more.
I know. Mm. You know, it could save lives. Cancelling daylight savings could save lives. So that's why it should be done.
Well, it's why Western Australia doesn't have daylight savings, which means during summer they're always 3 hours behind, because, well, they've kept rejecting it at referendums, because apparently daylight savings can cause the breakdown of civil society and family life.
Yeah, that's the thing. I do feel, and I'm just checking, because somebody in the chat is asking, is daylight savings start tomorrow? It's Sunday, the 27th.
Well, yeah, you've got to turn your clocks forward by an hour at 2 a.m.
I think ours is at 1 a.m., but I could be wrong.
Oh, it's always 2 a.m.
It is 2 a.m. I see that here. So, when local central time is about to reach Sunday, 27th, 2 a.m., it's turned forward 1 hour to 3 a.m. Okay. Sunrise and sunset will be 1 hour later than on the day before, just so that you know, just in case you're confused about when the sun is coming up. I actually am kind of a fan of daylight savings because it means I don't find it that much of a problem. You want the middle of the day to be kind of, you know, closer to the middle of the day anyway, who knows. Well, that's not really what it does it, but anyway, it's when you're walking home from work in the dark or whatever, it's much nicer to have a bit of extra light, and obviously being able to do stuff outside later in the evenings. I much prefer that. But I know plenty of people really hate daylight savings. So let us know in the chat.
Look, all it does is just shock your body clock for an hour once a year.
It can do, but I find it just something because if you've got young people who have young children will understand, but the children, they tend to sync up with the sun sun anyway. And so what's happened during these past couple of weeks is that they've been getting up earlier and earlier and earlier. So when daylight savings happens, they get pushed forward an hour, which kind of brings things back to normal, and they actually don't get up at try and wake you up at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. Although that doesn't always last that long, but they will it gives you a little bit of breathing room as a parent, which is nice.
Yes, you've got the three little ones who during the pre-show are quite loud.
Yeah, there was only one of them that you could hear. I usually try and put the two oldest ones to bed before, but I understand if we had the children running around here during the show, you wouldn't be able to hear us.
Oh, but it's 2020, the current year. There's been so many live crosses that have been from homes children interrupting.
I still remember last year people were laughing at that one BBC presenter had his kid.
Yeah, they actually brought him back this year to talk about what's it like working at home, and they actually had his whole family there because, hey, this guy was doing it all and had the family interrupt before it was common.
Who would have thought? Very good.
All right, I'll get back to talking about the curfew challenge because the state government fought tooth and nail to conceal the advice they relied upon to implement the curfew because they received legal advice, the Victorian government, from their own lawyers that imposing the curfew could be illegal. It could be in breach of human rights.
Oh, no, that's not possible.
Mm. Yeah, so the Supreme Court has compelled the state government to provide this advice. So this challenge is being launched by Mornington Peninsula cafe owner Michelle Laio. She is a member of the Liberal Party, but that doesn't discount the merits of a lawsuit. Ms. Leo's legal team is arguing the curfew is in breach of Victorians' human rights and will argue that Professor Giles, she's the person that recommended it, was acting irrationally and unreasonable when she signed off on the curfew order. They argue Victorians were subject to arbitrary detention on being ordered inside from their homes from 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. each night, loosened to 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. on September 14th. Bombshell legal advice was revealed in a pre-trial directions hearing for the case for the trial that begins on Monday. Meanwhile, Judge Timothy Giannini will decide if key data Professor Giles said she used to come to her decision to extend the curfew will be released. Because it's been well
Nice.
established, it wasn't a recommendation of the Chief Health Officer Dr. Brett Sutton or the Victorian Police Commissioner Shane Patton, even though Daniel Andrews has said that it was to assist police within enforcing the lockdown. Though, despite the fact that we've been in some form of lockdown for the past 6 months here in Victoria, I'm shocked that criminals aren't abiding by the rules because it was revealed by Deputy Victoria Police Commissioner Rick Nugent. We haven't heard from Assistant Commissioner Luke Chief
Chief
Wiggan
Wigan.
Cornelius for a while. As you can see, that's Rick Nugent there. He looks a much more sort of like normal.
Less donuts.
Yeah.
Fewer. Sorry,
Looks
fewer
like
donuts.
look, look,
I
looks
mind my
like
grammar.
he could actually do the beep test. Yeah. So, Victoria's offence rate was up 6% to the year end of June. That only includes the first lockdown compared with the previous period. So they're launching a Operation Alliance, a statewide anti-gang strategy to target the changing face of youth crime because there's still been car thefts, aggravated burglaries, the home invasions, robberies, and the assaults, even though, oh, as Daniel Andrew would say, it's not safe, it's not smart, it's selfish and stupid.
Yes,
Yeah.
human rights.
Don't forget that at the beginning of the pandemic, the left progressives were urging governments to empty out the jails because of coronavirus spread.
Oh, exactly. Oh, what? The crime rate went up. That's not possible. People are, we told everybody to stay home and save lives. How could that possibly be happening?
Meanwhile,
And we took away all of these human rights, and for some reason, criminals are still doing their thing. How could that be possible?
family violence offences have reached a new record during the lockdown,
That's
given that,
tragic.
well, a offend perpetrators and victims are forced into lockdown homes together. There's more mental health presentations at hospitals now. There's been a number of reported suicides associated with the mental strain of the lockdown. We're having more pubs announce that they will never reopen, even when the state does reopen. And we also had the tragic death of a 14-year-old autistic boy who went missing
That
in
was the
the
one.
Yarra Ranges, and his brother was told, and so were a number of volunteers, that they couldn't participate in the search because they'd be breaking the 5 kilometer radius limit, and well, also it might take more than 2 hours outside to
That's
search for
right.
him.
Stay home, save lives, and leave your brother out to die.
Yeah, so that was a really tragic story.
Absolutely. Yep. No, I saw that one in New Zealand. Just, that's the wonders of living in a dictatorship where you don't have human rights.
Now, in the interests of making sure that we don't, I know we often exaggerate here on the show, but we don't want to perpetuate or not call out fake news, because there was this satire article published in the Spectator where which claimed that Dan Andrews said it was written by James McPherson. It was labelled as a satire. It said, "Drongo alert, what follows is satire." Dan Andrews was quote, well, the title of it was, we actually read it out on the Uncuckables because we love reading out satire. And it's always a, but this is the thing about the reason why people fall for so much satire these days, because it's almost believable. The article was titled, If You Don't Want to Be Kicked in the Head, Don't Put Your Head Under a Jackboot. It's not only selfish or stupid. The article includes comments purportedly made by Mr. Andrews that heavy-handed police response to demonstrations can be avoided if people don't protest. In fact, you'd be surprised at how much can be avoided if people stop insisting on their personal freedoms, because insisting on human rights is not only selfish, it's stupid. It goes on to quote Mr. Andrews as saying, and it refers to his Instagram post here. And it says, the Victorian government spokeswoman told AAP Fact Check that Mr. Andrews did not make the statement included in the Instagram post. This is not a comment from the Premier. What he did, what Daniel Andrews did say, it was in response to Tim Wilson, a federal Liberal MP, when he wrote to the human rights organisation, including the Australian Human Rights Commissioner, he also used to be a commissioner of, asking for investigation into the rules which he claims could be a breach of human rights. And Daniel Andrews said, it's not about human rights, it's about human life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully that clarifies that, because I do see that quote circulated. And did you know that the Babylon Bee, which is still repeatedly fact-checked by Facebook's independent fact-checkers, they've actually launched a real news website now called Not the Bee.
And they do have a different real news site, because Not the Bee is real news that sounds so crazy it should be fake. But they do have a third one that's just normal news. But yeah, so they've got one site that's satire that sounds like it's real, then they've got the real stuff that sounds like satire. And
what's the third one called? I haven't heard of it.
And I cannot remember the name of the third one, sorry.
It's based, the reason why they call it Not the Bee is it's based on that expression, Not the Onion.
Not the Onion, No, it's good, and I've been seeing it around, and it's been quite... It shouldn't be 2020 is just such a crazy year. I wonder if things will continue like this.
We're getting towards the last 10 minutes of the show, which it's time for our audience participation. So we've both been putting the entropy link in both the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube chat, so you can ask a question through entropy and also send through a super chat through there. And as regular viewers might be aware, my normal microphone is not working. I don't know why. So I'm just using the webcam microphone. I've been doing that all week. So any super chat you send now will help me fix the mic issues, so you can sound me better and clearer, so there won't be an echo. So that's your incentive to send through a super chat, or send through a donation through the unshackled.net/donate.
And yes, we will wrap the show up at 9 o'clock tonight, so we will take some of your questions and get through as many as we can. Before I do that, I've just been able to discern is the third website. Thank you, Margot, for that. The third website, so you've got the satire, which is Babylon Bee, the not satire, which is not the Bee, and then the real standard normal news called Discern. That was founded by the CEO of the Babylon Bee, who left. He basically said it's too hard to write satire, so I'm going to write real news instead.
Well, XYZ, their claim is that XYZ satire always predicts the future, because I think I mentioned last week.
And that's pretty much what happened to him. He's like, I'm just going to write real stuff because it comes true anyway.
XYZ has been commonly writing about the COVID death camps for thought criminals. And, well, with the omnibus bill, with the arbitrary detention powers and the announcement from the Premier last week that they're expanding the state's prison capacity, it basically looks similar to what XYZ has written. Us on the Unshackled yesterday, we published, we properly label our satire piece from Blair Cottrell talking about the world leaders eyeing Victoria as the test case in a global COVID reset scheme.
And that probably won't be satire for long. And
I put a disclaimer there.
If I do any satire, I've had to label it satire as well the last year or two, because you can't really get away with genuine satire like you used to, where people could tell the difference. It's just not possible anymore.
Mm. Well, I put an editor's note. What follows is satire, but based on events in the current year, it could turn out to be true.
Exactly. Very good. I've got a question here, since we have some time for that, from Origin. He said, if the economy goes south fast after this election, what do you think the chances will be of a snap election? And it certainly is possible, since our wage subsidy schemes will run out after the election. It's possible things will get worse very quickly. But also, if there is a Labor or a Labor Greens government, or even a National ACT government, they're close enough together to not fall apart. So there's no real need for them to hold a snap election if they can keep things together in the caucus, which is quite likely, especially if they're ideologically aligned with each other. The odds of a snap election are going to be zero. And for the past 3 years, people have sort of been expecting or predicting a snap election in New Zealand, saying that the current coalition government is not very stable, but it's turned out to have a very high priority on keeping things together. So you'll find that they'll be even less fractured, even tighter after the election. Whoever wins will actually probably result in a rather stable government with the current polling, and you're never going to get a snap election like that.
Well, New Zealand's never had any snap elections.
Muldoon.
That was like 6 months early, which is hardly... Like, a snap election is like halfway through a term. That's how we interpret it in Australia, or like Theresa May's snap election in 2016, when they just had an election in 2015.
But yeah, you're right, Ben, in that compared to other countries, we don't have snap elections. And the closest thing we've had to a snap election was an announcement made by a prime minister while he was probably drunk. So
yes, yeah, he was asked, "Oh, that doesn't give you much time for an election." And his response: "Oh, well, it won't give my opponents much time either." He was the last socialist prime minister you had up until the current one, even though he's a National Party prime minister.
Even compared to the current one, Robert Muldoon was basically the last genuine, like the sort of before what they would call neoliberal prime ministers. Even Jacinda Ardern would be called a neoliberal by those on the left, I think. So he genuinely was the last truly socialist prime minister.
Almost every aspect of New Zealanders' lives was controlled under his prime ministership.
Absolutely, it was. And people remember it fondly. Who knows, maybe. I don't want to make any predictions for the next few years, but who knows.
Yeah. Now, we talked about New Zealand's shock economic retraction last week of 12% of GDP. Who knew that shutting down everything, including KFC, would lead to that?
Especially KFC.
Mm. Well, we've got the Australian federal budget being announced by the Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, in October. It's normally given by the Treasurer in May, but given all the money that the federal government was spending during the height of the pandemic, there was not going to be accurate information or financial information. But the deficit, well, back in pre-COVID normal times, they were projecting a budget surplus for 2019-20. Now, what we're looking at is a $83 billion deficit, biggest deficit in Australian history. So, which is 4.3% of
Although
GDP.
that, at least compared to the amount of borrowing and deficits we're running, we're probably running very similar to 4% or more. So.
And the Morrison government, they've confirmed this week, they're adamant that JobKeeper, the wage subsidy, will end in March next year, and it is
That's
going to be
quite
cut
long.
at the end of this month from $1,500 a fortnight to $1,200. Basically, they're setting this, you'd call it this wage subsidy cliff, to basically get the state governments out of all their restrictions by then, because the state governments get to implement the restrictions and lockdowns, but don't have to pay for them. The federal government pays for it, including the Queensland state border closure. So this is basically their deadline.
You see Margot mentioning here so many people going to lose their homes and how many people have frozen their mortgages, which is something we talked about on the a couple of weeks ago here for New Zealand, because we had the numbers that at least 7% of New Zealand mortgages were either frozen or in arrears. If they don't, and the job numbers are not really showing that people are getting jobs back, right? Which means that as soon as those schemes end, it's over for these people, and things can
It's
get very, very ugly.
2021 is going to be the economic reality hit. And because
I think it's very likely.
as I just mentioned, the list of pubs in Melbourne who've announced that they're not going to reopen, that's going to grow. There's been a lot of retailers Australia-wide who said they're going to be shutting down their stores, just going to online shopping, or that new term, click and collect, contactless delivery.
It's
And
the thing is, walking into shops now is annoying. We still have some, and especially the countdowns tend to be woker, which is Woolworths, owned by Woolworths, tend to be woker than every other business. And so you have to sign in, basically. I went to a countdown in the city, and you had to sign in to be able to get inside
oh, the
a private
QR code.
business. Or write your name in the book. Meanwhile, you get on the trains on public transport where you're legally obligated to be wearing a mask, for instance. There's no enforcement there. Nobody will stop you. But you want to walk into a countdown, you want to walk into a shopping, a shop, then they're far more likely to have some kind of weird requirements. So people are finding it, you know what, I might as well stay home and get my stuff delivered instead. At least that's certainly the attitude that I've got at the moment.
And both Australia and New Zealand are still fortresses, at least till the end of the year. Hardly anyone is allowed in or out, and that's going to mean, and a lot of economists have projected, that our populations will go down, because who wants to invest or migrate or stay in a nation which entraps you?
Wait, actually, don't mean to finish on some bad news, but we actually had Jacinda Ardern announce today that while the borders are closed, we're still accepting refugees in New Zealand, because we have international obligations to take refugees, even though our borders are closed. So the supposedly non-binding UN Compact for Migration that we signed up to is obligating us to keep accepting refugees, even though we're in the middle of a pandemic lockdown.
Well, there hasn't been such such words from Peter Dutton, our Home Affairs
No, because
Minister.
you bailed out on that, remember? Australia bailed out of the UN UN migration agreements for good reason, obviously, which means you have no such obligations. But yes, here in New Zealand, our government has decided that even though the borders are supposedly closed and nobody is allowed to come in, the refugee program has to keep running.
Our federal Biosecurity Act has banned international travel until December 17th.
So just in time for Christmas.
Yes, well, that's when all the state borders are due to reopen, except for Western Australia's. So
which
that's
permanently
when
seceded.
you'd call it, what is it, a their hard border closure, you'd call a form of soft secessionism. I'm sort
Yeah,
of thinking
exactly.
that maybe WA should, if they do want to permanently secede, adopt the independence model that the Cook Islands has with New Zealand, which is New Zealand takes care of Cook Islands' foreign and defence, and they do the rest.
Yeah, pretty much. And obviously they get free passports and get our money and those are the other benefits they get. And for the rest, they can do what they like.
So it's going to be, as people say, a summer like no other. We'll see if the predicted exodus from Melbourne and Victoria happens during that period, because, well, if there's no vaccine, then you wouldn't put it past another winter lockdown, as the UK is doing at the moment.
Sure. Last question before we wrap up the show. I see here from Emma. What is the new Conservative Party immigration policy, which is a net zero immigration policy? So essentially what we have now, although we're still because of the influx of returning New Zealanders from third world countries, and for some reason we seem to have a lot of them there, we would basically cap immigration at a net zero rate for however long it takes for us to actually build more housing and infrastructure, so that we don't have the housing crisis that we're in now, which is in fact only getting worse because it's the only thing that people are putting money into, because your house is not going to walk away when the rest of the economy is vaporized.
Well, as I'm predicting, and a lot of others are predicting, at least the Victorian housing market will suffer a plunge, and so will we're likely to have a negative net immigration next year.
But it's possible for people to leave and to move more rurally as well as possible. But in New Zealand at the moment, we're seeing house prices continue to soar at unprecedented rates, because in particular because we just have not enough houses, too many people, and that's the problem.
Sydney Watson, she was active in the Australian anti-SJW scene. She's dual Australian American. She's back in America and is not no way coming back to Australia given what's happened this year. Katie Hopkins, I don't think she'll go back to the UK. She's out in the US now, campaigning for
Refugee
Trump.
status. Yeah, she needs refugee status.
I
We'll
wouldn't
see.
blame
It's good.
her for never going back.
No, I wouldn't either. With the way things are going there, I don't think I would ever go back to the UK either. Who knows? Maybe another holiday one day, but that's still at least a decade off, I think, before we get the vaccine. Before the vaccine comes, it'll be 10 years. So.
We haven't heard anything else from the Oxford vaccine,
No,
which is.
no. I keep saying it every time people come up with their the vaccine's so close. No, it's not. That's the answer. No, it's not, and it's not coming. So we shall see. We live in interesting times, and we will be back next week at the usual time in Melbourne, but at the later time of 9 p.m. in Auckland, because daylight savings starts on Sunday, 2 a.m. So don't forget to move your clock 1 hour forward if you live in New Zealand, and then we'll see you at 9 p.m. New Zealand time next week.
But your iPhone or whatever else, that'll just do it automatically.
Yeah, that's
You
right.
only
If
have
you're
to do it
old
if you've
school, if you're old school, old school watches, I
Yeah,
can't even.
if you've got a
Anyway,
grandfather
old
clock.
clocks. Yeah, exactly. So that's me. I've got a lot of clocks around the house that I have to move forward.
And of course, we'll be doing a special New Zealand election night special, which will be Saturday, October 17th, which will
Yes.
be 5 p.m. Melbourne time, which is because it's 7 p.m. New Zealand time when the polls close.
That's right. And we will probably replace the Friday show with that Saturday special. And we'll let you know, likely, again, because most because things have been so volatile in New Zealand, basically all the campaign events, at least the large gatherings, have been cancelled. So we're likely to continue doing the show on Friday for the next 3 or 4 weeks until that time. So thank you, everyone, for watching. It's been really good to have you on the show. You can go to rightminds.nz for any of my content, which I haven't had any of in months, but who knows. I'm actually back on public transport at the moment, which is usually where I do most of my writing. Ask me about public transport next week. Sometimes I forget, which is why I know that it's not really that compulsory, because nobody asks you if you forget. So anyway, I'll talk more about public transport next week. Because we'll still be in level two. So that's it from me. And any closing comments from you, Tim?
Oh, well, as always, who knows what tomorrow's COVID numbers will be, and who knows what Dan Andrews will decree on Sunday. We can only wait. We our lives depend every day on his daily announcements or pronouncements. So,
all right. Well, good night, and everyone, stay safe and free if you're in New Zealand, and if you're in Melbourne, just stay safe, because you can't be free.
Yeah, stay sane and stay happy. That's what I say now.
Good night.
Good night.